Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Overnight America continues. Right now, Pam Bondi is on the Senate floor. Senators wrapping up their first day of impeachment trial questions. Oh, maybe they're done. Now, maybe they're showing a montage right now. Maybe she's showing clips. I don't know. But they're getting pretty close to wrapping up here. But either way. Oh, no, it's the Democrats. I got psyched out. Patrick Philbin, the Trump impeachment attorney. Now they're showing him on CNN. Are they done? Let's see.
It depends on which senator you're talking about. I mean, that's really the key here. It's something that John Thune, who is the majority whip.
It sounds like they are in the post coverage. So maybe I missed it. Maybe they're all done now. Whew. That was a barn burner down there in the Senate now, wasn't it? I'm sure you'll get some recaps on that tomorrow morning, but still, I think I got you the good stuff. Don't worry. Overnight America, we hold off and we keep the good stuff for you. You know how sometimes you go into a place and you're like, where's the good stuff? They're like, no, we got the, it's right there, look at it. And you say, no. Where? You lean in and you say, where's the good stuff? And they go, right this way, sir. That's what Overnight America's about. I wanted to start this hour off a little bit different because the LA Times did a story that was written by Joe Buck, and he talks about his dad, Jack Buck. The whole story is fantastic. We know that 50 years ago, his father called Super Bowl IV between the Kansas City and Minnesota. And because of that, now 50 years later, his son, Jack Buck, will be calling the Super Bowl, or Joe Buck, who wrote this article, will be calling the Super Bowl with Kansas City in it as well. It's pretty phenomenal, this whole article. I want to read you a couple of highlights of it, if I could. And we know that Joe Buck will be with Troy Aikman in the booth. They've called, what, five together? This is their sixth Super Bowl that they're going to be calling. It's funny, when it's family and your family is someone that's well-known, you think about how well-known Jack Buck is here in St. Louis, but nationally speaking, people still remember the talent of Jack Buck. When you're the son and you're Joe, and you look back at some of these old photos and you're doing research and you see the videos of your dad, it's something that I'm sure you sit down and you savor that, and you can get emotional pretty quick, I'm sure. So let me read some of this to you, and I just love the perspective. It said, the Super Bowl was... A Super Bowl has never ended in a tie, but my dad's Super Bowl began in one. It was a beautiful striped necktie, and I would wear it for Super Bowl broadcast if I can find it. I refer to it as my dad's game because it was the only Super Bowl that my late father, Jack Buck, ever called on TV, even though he did years of them on the radio. I noticed the necktie because it's kind of funny fashion has come around this way. It's taken 50 years for my dad's style to be relevant again. When I think of him, I think of how he dressed when he was 70. He was colorblind, and he used to joke that he was one of those guys that got dressed in the dark. Things didn't match. Looking at my dad and Pat Summerall, who I see two guys coming off of a big night on Bourbon Street. They're sweaty, my dad's a little bloated, and I could tell they had fun. They weren't stressed about doing the broadcast like I will be before this year's Super Bowl. My dad's wearing a monstrous headset that goes entirely around his ears. My dad and I were blessed with rather large ears, but they're tucked in there. Troy Aikman and I will be at the Hard Rock Stadium, and we've already scouted it out. We've got a green screen and all sorts of snacks laid out, a Keurig machine, and we'll have a thick rubber mat between us and under our feet, because we'll be standing a majority of the game. If I count the monitors in front of Troy, it's probably got 10 screens I can look at. I've seen that one tiny grainy monitor that was hooked up from the truck. And that's the picture quality probably felt like from the Flintstones. I'm sure that's all they had. They do not have the best seats in the house. They're in the euchre seats up there. Also, I'm sure my dad doesn't have a bathroom nearby. That was my number one fear and the first thing I checked out before doing a game. How close is the bathroom? The commercial breaks are longer in the Super Bowl, so I don't have to worry about regulating my fluid intake before the game. If the bathroom is easily accessible, I don't worry about it. But in places like Cleveland, there's a dead sprint to get to the bathroom and back. My dad told me when I was just starting my career at 19, don't ever run to the microphone because you're going to be out of breath and you're never going to catch up. You just start talking right away. In the Super Bowl IV broadcast, if they were any closer to the camera, their noses would be smudged up against the lenses. If my dad's camera shot is indicative of how much room they had, there weren't a lot of people up in the booth with them. We'll have at least 10 people in the booth to make us look smart, including our editorial consultant. Then you have a makeup person. I'm sure my dad and Pat just pulled up their ties and went on national TV. There's a beauty to the simplicity of that broadcast, a nice pace to it. It's more of a radio commentary because both guys were coming over from radio and people's pictures at home were not high definition, 65-inch camera shots. I'm seeing my dad at his best before age set in, before Parkinson's took hold, before he went through lung cancer, before he had diabetes and a pacemaker. Even the stresses of life, I'm seeing my dad at his peak. And I didn't know him then. I was 8 months old, but I never knew him as that man. It's crazy to sit in my office, turn on YouTube, and see some ways to research about the Chiefs and the Super Bowl history and have my dad brought to life for me. My dad makes a small mistake right at the beginning of the broadcast, then corrects himself. That gets me. It hits me. Oh my, he made a mistake. These days, you try to be perfect in large part because of social media. You try to be fluent and brilliant and never say something stupid. And in the case of the Super Bowl, you're in the air for 4 hours on live TV in front of 115 million people. Stress is all I feel. It's this weird pressure to try to be perfect on something that isn't perfect, a live event. It's impossible to be perfect, and yet that's the standard I hold myself to, and it takes a lot of fun out of it. After every game, I take two Tylenol. That's pressure. It's why I see a chiropractor. It's why at the end of the game, the tension is on the back of my head at the top of my neck because I'm standing up the entire broadcast, and I'm almost hunched over looking down over the ridiculous number of monitors we have to try to see the near sideline or try to see the entire field. You almost hold your breath while you do it. Troy and I are on camera at the beginning of the Super Bowl broadcast. Troy's talking. I'm thinking, remember to smile so I don't look too nervous. Look back at the camera because that's who you're talking to. A lot of times I picture my kids on the other side of that camera. Back when I did my first major event in 1996 doing the Yankees World Series, I pictured my dad on the other side of the other end. And like I was talking to him. I couldn't find that necktie Dad wore. But if I did, I'd wear it. I think I'll wear his watch on Sunday. He gave it to me just one breakfast when we were broadcast partners on St. Louis Cardinals Radio. I was 23. He said, "Let me see your watch." I took my watch off. He took his off and said, "I want you to have this." It was a gift from his employer in his years of hard work, and he wanted me to have it. I think my dad would be proud Sunday and glued to the TV. If he were alive, I'd call him after the game and ask him about the job I did. When I dialed him in October of 1996 after calling Game 6 of the World Series, he acted like he didn't know what time the game was on, as if he didn't watch any of it. Then after a pause, he said, "It was great, Buck. It was great." And he handed the phone to Mom. The next day, I called home and said, "What was with Dad last night?" And she said, "He was crying so hard that he couldn't talk." What a story. Ah, I love that. That was written by Joe Buck. It's on the LA Times website. You can go see it right now. Great picture of Jack Buck that they used for the article. I just thought that was fantastic. It was worth reading, and I loved it so much. You know, you choke up. You choke up just thinking of all the history here. And I know a lot of people here listen to Jack Buck for many, many, many years and realize what kind of a special guy that was. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
St. Louis's Morning News, Total Information AM, weekday mornings at 5 on KMOX and KMOX.com.
I have so many great Jack Buck moments saved right now as I'm going through old KMOX audio. Man, I'll tell you what, it is addicting to scan through and listen to some of these old broadcasts. I don't know what it is, but I look forward to it. So I basically get into the studios a little bit earlier than usual. And okay, we're going to talk impeachment for this time. Okay, what else am I going to talk about? And then I try to rush through that as fast as I can, because I know if I have extra time, I could go back through the archives and get some more work done. And man, I got a lot of great stuff to play for you guys. I think I'm going to have to spread it out there for a little while. I saw this one over in the Post-Dispatch. I think there's more reporting on it now, but I think they were the first one to say that Mayor Lyda Crewson wants to see the Bi-State Development Agency Board to reconsider a rejected plan to restart and operate the Loop Trolley. Come on now. It's dead. Stop it. It's already dead. Just please stop. At some point, you just want to yell and scream. And I have been, but I'm not the only one either. How many warning bells went off immediately for this thing? How many times did people say, no, 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 and they still pushed through with this? They had to persevere. And in the end, who was right? The people that said, this is terrible. Don't be spending money on this. It's a big waste of money. Were they right? Or is it the government who's right? Well, the trolley's not running right now. They anticipate they need about, what, an extra $1 million a year, a shortfall to keep this thing going. They make it sound like this is a massive mode of transportation around St. Louis. It's a 2-mile track between the History Museum and Forest Park and the Del Mar Loop. It's not mass transportation. It has no hookup anywhere else. People don't use it. It just, they don't. They have no intention to use it. It's a novelty thing. And I'll tell you what, the Del Mar Loop's cool, but are you going to ride a trolley from one side to the other? Are you going to wait 45 minutes for that thing to show up? Not a chance. You're just going to walk down it. It's not like the biggest stretch ever. And I mean, I guess if you have some issues walking, you wouldn't. But you probably know where you're going to go, and you know that you can just park somewhere close to it, and you don't have to worry about getting stuck behind a trolley because the thing won't be running. But now they want to keep this charade going. I think part of it has to do with the fear of paying money back. We don't know if they have to, because the negotiation process, you know, they could negotiate and put an argument together of why they don't have to or why they should spare us paying money back, because they technically put it back together and they ran it for a while. It was just a failure, whatever it is. They could ask money. They could not. Who knows? But I can tell you one thing. What we know is this thing took a lot of money and a lot of time to put together. We know that people, generally speaking, are not riding it. Less than 10% of what they anticipated would be riding it. We know that it needs about $750,000 to $1 million extra a year to keep this thing going. We know that there's no indication that it's going to get any better. We know that there's no indication that it's going to be run any better. So a few things I would like answered first before we even consider starting this trolley back up. Number one, who is going to be held accountable for this failure? How many different agencies have their hands in the honeypot with this one? There's 10, 12 different agencies that have some sort of oversight to it, you know, some more than others, but there's a lot of agencies that were represented in trying to get this thing going. So ask this question: with it closed down and you can't afford it right now, no private business wants to step up and try to keep this thing going either, because they know it's a big failure. Who is going to be held accountable for it? If you can't answer that question, then don't you dare, City of St. Louis, consider picking this up and then being the one held accountable for it. Do not. So here's what they say in the article. Let's see. She said that she wants to work with the regional partners to, quote, figure it out. I think there are still some unanswered questions, and we ought to figure out how not to owe back $25 million. See, we don't even know if that's accurate or not. You really don't. And there's a pretty good chance there's not $25 million that's going to be going back anyway. Says the official regional administrator, Makhti Ahmed, said there would be no effort to recover $11 million in other trolley-related federal spending because those were, quote, street projects that would be done anyway, end quote. A motion Friday to advance a plan to bail out the trolley for 4 years died. Lack of a second meeting, the two bi-state board committees, 9 of 10 members of the board took part. Asked by one bi-state board member on Friday whether his agency had ever tried to claw back grant money previously, they said, we came close once in another part of the country. Came close. Well, that's interesting. One of the big parts about this, too, is just recently another trolley system failed in Philadelphia. And if you want to feel a little better about the problems we have here in St. Louis, they wasted over $100 million on theirs. Woo, boy, they did twice as much as ours. So take that, Philly. Now, I think that's an indication that these systems are high risk with little reward. Like, what's the if the risk was so high putting this in, knowing so many people knew this wasn't going to work, but still they thought, you know, it's nice little, it's like a lawn ornament. It's like a little novelty piece. It's kind of cool to have. And in the end, you know, it's a nice little feature that looks good on postcards or whatever. People take pictures. It gives a nice impression of the area. Does it draw business to the area? Not really. I don't think it did. I mean, if you only have less than 10%, what was it, like 4 or 5% ticket sales of what they anticipated? If that's all, how did that really drive any revenue to that area? It probably, if anything, deterred because some of these businesses lost some of the real estate in front of their cars or in front of their businesses. A lot of people were just frustrated because when they try to go down into this area, they get stuck behind this trolley that was sitting there for 45 minutes or an hour or whatever it is, and it's like a giant traffic jam. They hated this thing. You know, they can't pass this thing. It's just a mess. So I'm sure people just said, I'm done. I'm not going there. I'm not bothering with it. I can't afford to get stuck on my lunch hour behind a stupid trolley, so I'm not even going to bother to go into lunch there. I'm sure people were just done with it. And then plus the taxes added on top of it. I'm sure all the companies that were there, the businesses that were there, I'm sure they love the accounting of that and having to charge their customers more for this tax of something that people weren't using. So, no, there wasn't much of a benefit to it to begin with. I think that was pretty lofty to begin with. What was the benefit of it? There wasn't any benefit of it. It was just a novelty thing. So it's not a surprise. So City of St. Louis, what are you thinking accepting responsibility and accepting the accountability of this thing? So what happens when you take this over? Are you just going to write a blank check to it? You're just going to keep it going forever. And then eventually when you realize, man, we just can't afford this, then you're going to be the one that's holding the bag. You're going to be the one responsible for all of its faults. Don't do it. This is such a terrible idea. It's like accepting the debt of a home that's underwater. So, you know, you might think, oh, I can get this, or, you know, a family member may want to gift you something, and you're basically gifted a responsibility like a timeshare or something crazy like that. So many people, you hear those commercials for timeshare, getting out of your timeshare contract. So many people are duped in those things. Yeah, it would almost be like, here, I'm going to gift you a timeshare. Here's your responsibility to pay all this money for something that's not going to be worth it in the long run. Congratulations. No, say no thank you. Don't take the responsibility over. Just don't do it. If you want to talk trolley, or if you want to try to talk some sense into the City of St. Louis and the mayor who wants this revisited, what's your message to them? 436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals. Now back to Overnight America on KMOX, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back. So Joe called in and said, you better watch out calling out corruption or they'll impeach you. That's funny. That is funny. Next thing you know, this is what they're saying to me.
Bye-bye, sugar pie.
Yep. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know. Well, here we are in Overnight America. Tonight's one of those weird nights. I don't know what it is. Tonight just feels off. I don't know why. The whole night feels off. Like something's weird. Something's different about tonight, but I can't quite put my finger on it. I don't know what it is. Maybe we're at the impeachment fatigue moment where anything that happens after this point is just not going to be as interesting. I want to talk to you about your first job. Well, your very first job. I want you to go back and think about your first job. What were you doing for your first job? Were you working hard? Were you not working hard? Were you someone that was afraid to get their hands dirty? I got to find this article. I just lost it a second ago. I was someone that was working for the Parks and Rec Department for my city that I lived in. I loved it. Loved working the job. I loved making money. Even though I was making minimum wage, it was still great because I met a lot of friends on the job. Times are changing. Your first job now, the things that I did in my first job, I go back and look at it, and I'm glad that I did it. But today, it's like everyone complains about these types of duties, and some will even sue. And I saw this one article about Chipotle getting fined over child labor abuses. And the gist of it is they asked them to work too late on school nights. Ooh, what? When I was a kid, I loved working late on school nights. There's a few things that happened. Working in the Parks and Rec Department during the school year, so it was off of the summer, you know. It was indoors. You would work the desk. There'd be people coming in and using the rec department. You know, maybe they just wanted to go to the basketball courts. Maybe they wanted to go work out upstairs in the rec center or whatever it is. But I was able to do my homework while I was at work, just, you know, in between people coming in and out. And generally speaking, there wasn't a large group. It's not like working a fast food where you're on your feet working crazy or anything like that. But I had the ability to keep things pretty steady or whatever it was. Then there were other times where things were busy and you have to go sit in the gym and you have to clean up here and clean up there, whatever it is. But I never complained and I always wanted to work. I never felt like I was being taken advantage of. In fact, I felt like I was taking advantage of the city because I was like, yeah, I'm getting paid to do this, man. I'm sitting around watching a basketball game because my job is just to make sure no one does anything they shouldn't do. It was easy work, easy pay. You know, I'd go home, do homework after that or whatever it is, and then go to school, and I liked it. But now people and kids, they complain about it. I'm sure I was working more hours than you were allowed to. I don't know if this is still the case or not, but when, let's see, you had to be, was it 14 and a half or 15? Or was it 15 and a half before you can work? I can't remember what the law was in Michigan. But basically, as soon as I was allowed to work, I started working. And I thought it was great. My buddy of mine, his mom worked for the city, got us jobs there, no problem. Not like it was that hard to get a job there to begin with. But she put in the good word. We were there. We were doing our thing. And I met some great lifelong fans that way. You know, my best man at the wedding, someone I went to school with, but we worked together, some other people in my wedding too. And it was just great. It was almost like those movies when you go back and look at those teen movies of, you know, those high school movies. It was kind of like that type of setting. We just had a lot of fun. But the times have changed. Now it's like, oh, they're asking me to work an hour over. I'm allowed to. I'm going to sue them. Oh, boy. Oh, it's like the part-time worker holds all the cards and they say, you know, everything's a hassle. Everything's an inconvenience. It's like they're the ones dictating the way the company should be operating and asking you, oh, I can't believe they asked me to clean the bathrooms. This is child labor abuse. That's the kind of like feeling I'm getting anymore with these part-time jobs. It's, you know, the eagerness of the kids to get out there and get that experience is just not there anymore. I'll tell you what happened and what I learned with my first full-time job. I learned that if you actually work hard, they'll give you more responsibilities, and they'll give you responsibilities that they wouldn't ask other people who aren't working hard to do. And next thing you know, if you can excel at that too, they'll give you more chances. I think that's pretty much what you see in a lot of different first-time jobs, because the way that they would hire a minimum wage job, they don't know what they're getting. But if you're someone that's willing to work it, man, they'll do anything they can to keep you. But then eventually you're smart enough to say, maybe it's time I move on and get a little higher paying job. And that's how the business should work. I don't think you have to go in there and say, well, because of my lack of motivation and willingness to excel on the job, I'm going to demand the government to come in here and force them to pay me more so I can keep doing what I'm doing, not excelling at it. And then eventually, then I'll have a living wage at a minimum wage job. I can't imagine my first job trying to walk in there and saying, I need to make a living wage out of watching people play basketball in the gym to make sure they don't pull the net down or clean up the basketballs and sweep the floor at night. I just can't imagine that. So that's kind of what happened in Chipotle. They were fined $1.3 million over child labor abuses because, you know, they were working them too late. To me, I feel like this generation is soft. I think they're really soft. I never would have complained about that ever. Who's soft? You said the judges? Oh, for allowing that? Interpreting the law that way? Yeah. Uh-huh. I want you to talk about your first job. What was the... Let's bring this up. What are things that happened on your first job that you never complained about and still wouldn't complain about, but today you can see a younger generation complaining about? Is there anything that comes to mind? 314-436-7900. Call or text that line. Or 800-925-1120. You know, there was a point where we would get bored and we'd actually find things to do without our supervisor telling us to do it. You know, we just go and do things. And I think they appreciated that. You know what we had? I loved this thing. We almost fought over using the floor Zamboni. They had this one floor scrubber thing, and it had double throttles on each side. And it looked like a floor Zamboni, exactly what a Zamboni looks like, except you couldn't ride the thing. And there was like two, it didn't really wax. You filled it up with water, and you put some Fast Orange in there, and then you would go and you'd clean the floors. They had just like, you know, the brushes on the bottom that would kind of scrub the basketball courts. We had these plastic basketball courts. I forgot what they were called, but they were terrible. They were... there's a certain brand name, but each individual square was plastic, and they like punched into each other. Like, not like Legos, you didn't stack them on top of each other, but they had like little male and female parts on the side. So, you know, they would clip into each other, and then eventually you'd make an entire basketball court with this stuff. And I remember, yeah, and the people that would play on these floors, they would run around, and there'd be so much static electricity in there. They'd always be zapping each other. The floors would warp because they're plastic and people are playing basketball on them. And then eventually people wouldn't treat them all that well. And I remember one year they were so poorly put together that we had to rip it up and put a brand new one down the next year. It only lasted one year. And I don't want to know how much money they wasted in the government for that floor. But we'd always fight over the scrubber. Like, we want the scrubber. We want to do that or that. So we'd fight over the scrubber. We'd sweep the floors. And then literally for the next, you know, 5 hours or whatever our shift was as part-timers after school, we would sit and just, like, do nothing. And then when the night ended, you swept, turn off the lights, and locked the door, and you left. That was it. It was a great job. I loved it. There was one time they got a golden tee machine in there. You didn't have to put quarters. You can just play golden tee. I remember Frank and Craig, they became experts at that game. It was almost like they were world champions playing that thing. Because after you got the job done, you just played golden tee through that. Wasted so much money that way. But never once would we have complained to say, oh, I can't believe they held us over a little bit too late at night. My parents never complained about it. They knew that we were safe. We weren't getting into any trouble and we were doing something. We were working, earning some money. I thought that was the right thing to do. As a kid, you wanted to encourage your kids to go out there and find ways to become more independent. Show them that there is more than to just sit at home and play video games or whatever it is. So tell me about your first job. What are some of those things that you did that you would think today's generation would be complaining about? I'd like to take some of your calls on that coming in on Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Overnight America continues. Thank you for joining us here on this Wednesday night. Wow. The days, they fly right by, don't they? Except during the impeachment trial days, and then they just drag. So, yes, days like today just seem to drag. But they are done on the Senate floor, which is good news. Let's go to Michael calling in to Overnight America. Hi.
Hi.
What's going on?
Hey, nothing. Hey, I know you moved on to this segment, but I was driving to work for the last segment, so I couldn't call in.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that the part of the Loop Trolley's expense deal was they actually had insurance that would cover the complete removal of the trolley system.
Yeah, you know, I thought so too. And when I asked Tom Sullivan about that, he wasn't too sure if that was the case. I heard it on somewhere.
The radio.
Yeah,
but I can't find it anywhere.
Yeah, and I know I've read it. You may even heard me say it in the past, and that's where you've heard it.
It may have been, you know.
Yeah, and
all I listen to is talk radio.
Yeah, so. And I'm trying to remember where I saw it from. I read it somewhere. I just don't remember where I saw it. I'd have to go and try to dig a little bit deeper. But I know I read it somewhere. I'm trying to remember what document had it.
I mean, if we're covered with insurance, I don't understand what the big deal is. It's a failure.
I think the insurance was to cover repairing the roads. So, like, if they wanted to rip the track up, that's part of the insurance with it. That's what I thought it was talking about insurance.
Well, it was removal of the track and the rail system. I guess the track would be the rail system, but then the overhead stuff. Then to repair the road. I thought that was all covered.
Yeah, and I thought that was necessary in order for them to move forward with this project. They had to have the insurance. Because if you remember, just thinking back to all of this, remember when they tried to launch and it was a bad weather day, so they couldn't launch it. And then when they officially launched it, they couldn't actually go into the Del Mar Loop because they didn't pay the premium for the insurance yet. You remember that? So they had to get all of that settled before they can actually do the full track for the trolley. And I just can't remember how much of it was insured and what was insured. I just remember reading about it. Are you?
By the way, I'm a longtime listener. This is the first time I've actually gotten on the air.
Oh, is that right? There's not much of a gatekeeping system going on at nights. You know, there's a pretty good chance if you call in, you get on the air, which is nice.
That's fair.
Yeah. Well, where do you work?
I do have one request.
Oh, yeah.
I understand your new program system until the Cardinals show up, but because I'm an overnight guy. So the one thing that I do miss is Thursday night into Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get the Friday song anymore.
Oh,
at
yeah.
Midnight.
I know. But I play it early. I play it at 11 o'clock just because I still want to play it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I know. I love it. I love Friday. That was one of the things I said we got to keep doing because this is my justification for it, if I needed any justification, which I really don't. But it's at least midnight on the East Coast, and our signal reaches the East Coast, so we're allowed to pretend, you know, it's Friday. So we will continue that tradition. It's not going away. I could play it right now if you wanted to, but I'm not going to. It's not Friday. You have to wait. It's almost like you have to wait for those moments. You have to deny yourself the ability to listen to it until the moment is right, and then it really has a more impact on you.
Well, at 10:50 or 11:10, I'm in a work meeting to start my shift, so I don't get to listen at 11.
That's a bummer.
I guess that's why I've been missing it.
Isn't that strange that you request Rebecca Black? How did you ever in your life think you would request that song?
Honestly, I didn't even know Rebecca Black sang that song.
Do you know the story behind that song?
I do not.
Oh, it's a great story. I'll tell you the story here in a moment. Hey, thank you for calling in, Michael.
Hey, no problem.
All right, so this is the song. And I'm going off of memory, so it might be a little foggy. But back when there was a lack of Friday out there, Rebecca Black's parents, apparently, either they were pitched or they were looking for a music producer to make their daughter into a star. In walks, I think his name is Tyreek. I think that's who the producer's name is. He's become infamous after this. He said, I can make your daughter a star. Pay me this money and I'll make your daughter. It was a pretty big sum. It was like, I don't know, 15 grand or something like that. Might have to look at what the total. Double check if you could, Producer Mike, really quick. He's like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not looking up Rebecca Black. But it was something like that. So he took the money and he said, I'm going to make your kid a star. We're going to record a song. I already have it written. We'll just have her sing it and it'll be all yours. So she sings Friday, Friday, gotta get down. And they release it on the internet. The music video's there. And you know what happens? Everyone laughs at it. They say it's the worst song they've ever heard. You got to see this. They share it with friends. Next thing you know, it's unbelievable how many views this thing got on YouTube. So everyone's laughing at the kid. He's like, hey, I made your kid a star. And they're unhappy with it because it's not the way that they anticipate. It's almost like if you find a magic lamp and you rub it and all of a sudden the genie says you get three wishes, you'd say, I want to be known by the world. Wish granted. Boom. You record Friday and everyone laughs at you. You're known, but everyone laughs at you. Let's see. Rebecca Black Friday. Let's see how many views this has on YouTube. 139 million views. It was released 8 years ago. Wow. So afterwards, she becomes somewhat of an internet star. She gets some notoriety, some celebrities. You know, Jimmy Fallon even has a version of it that he sings on his show. And it was a fun little thing, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. And next thing you know, I'm using it on the show. Why not? Because it's Friday. Some several years later. Yeah, I haven't been asked to stop yet. So that's good news, too. What other songs does she have? Oh, she's got a whole bunch of other songs. Oh, she did a song called Saturday. Did you know she did a song called Saturday? I've never listened to it. I don't. It has 34 million views. A couple of her songs have over a million views. And I got to say, she put out a new song, and I think we played it last year. I would give her the Most Improved Artist Award. It was actually pretty good. Actually, she definitely improved since then. But still, the fun of it, you know, it's Friday, got to get down on Friday. I'm not going to stop playing that. I just love it too much. One quick thing before we go to break, because we got a couple minutes here. There was a story out of Canada in Toronto. CTV reported this one. How upset would you be to find out your credit score was completely tanked over a small oversight? And that's what happened to someone up there. Oh, I hate this. It should be easier to correct the record when things like this happen.
Gabriel Frano says he's careful with his money and tries to maintain a high credit score. When he checked it about a year ago, it was in the very good range.
I've always known that whenever I've gotten it checked, it was 750 up.
When he decided to get pre-approved to buy a condo, he was shocked to be told his credit score had dropped by almost 200 points.
Whoa.
I've dropped from, you know, above 750 to now 570, 580, which is apparently in the lowest 5% of Canadians.
When Frana...
Wow, Canadians have some pretty good credit scores, don't they? Ooh, doing pretty good.
...was denied a mortgage, he contacted Equifax and TransUnion. They told him he had an old credit card bill that was still unpaid.
Oh, what's up with that? The old credit card bill. How much money do you think this guy owed on that credit card? And these things are very easy to just completely look over. Like, let's say you pay it off. Okay, this is how much money. I'm never going to use this card again. I'll just pay it off. And you pay off the card and you're done. You think everything's all hunky-dory. And next thing you know, they're like, oh, we forgot to add this on. Oh, we forgot to do this. Oh, we didn't do that. How much money do you think this guy owed? And this prevents him from having a credit score worthy of being sold a mortgage.
This 95 cents right here.
95 cents. So 95 cents. He's saying to himself, no, I paid this thing off. You're telling me I dropped 200 points on my credit score for 95 cents I didn't even know I had.
95 cents, yeah.
Frano says years earlier he had traveled to Europe and had a credit card with Home Trust because it was a card with no foreign currency conversion surcharges. He says he closed the account last March and thought his balance was paid in full.
You know, even if it's paid at this point, it's still going to affect me going forth because it now says that I have delinquent payments on that account.
Will you pay the 95 cents?
I've paid it. I've paid it already.
Frano says the delinquent payment history will remain on his credit score for 6 years.
Doesn't that drive you nuts? It should be a little bit easier to correct stupid, frivolous little things like that that shouldn't affect you for the rest of time. 6 years before that goes off of it. So he calls CTV in Toronto. He says, come on, can you guys help me? I tried to get this off my record. They keep saying no, they can't do it. So the news gets involved. The news calls around. They try to get something done. And next thing you know, they say, oh, I think we can help now. Sometimes that's what it takes. You got to get the news out there before they actually try to help. All right, so coming up in the last hour of the show, Joe Biden had another one of those viral moments, and it's not the hairy leg moment. It's pretty good, but it's still not a hairy leg moment. And CNN had the former Clinton press secretary on there, Joe Lockhart, said a few interesting things about Donald Trump. I'll play that too. It's Overnight America.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.